Welcome back, Denver Broncos fans, to the DenverBroncos.com podcast. I'm your host, Ben Swanson, and with me today, we have our own Andrew Mason. Thanks for joining us, Mace.
Pleasure as always.
Now, this week, so much more fun for us and for beat reporters. We got players back on the scene, thank goodness. I don't know if many of them are happy to be back this early, but it's always great for us when we can get some more access with them. A lot more fun as we get kind of started for a new season. And it's only April and it's snowing, so it feels a little weird, but it's always more fun when they're in the building.
Yeah, I think actually the snow that fell at Dove Valley Thursday and was forecast to fall into Friday, I think that threw a lot of the new players for a loop, that they didn't quite understand the vagaries of Colorado weather and had experienced these gorgeous 70, 75, 80-degree days the last few weeks and thought that winter was over. But this is, you know, this is the capricious nature of Colorado weather. It'll warm up soon, but I think a lot of guys were surprised when they saw 2 inches of snow covering the practice fields.
I think Gino Gradkowski might be a little bit more accustomed because when he was traded and when he arrived on the scene at Dove Valley, not too much later than that, it was one of these kind of days. I think it was snowing that day. So he's got a nice little taste, a couple snows in March and April for him.
Yeah, and he didn't get he was a trade acquisition, so he didn't get what I call free agent wooing weather. Oftentimes, it seems like in March when the Broncos are bringing free agents in, you'll get those 65, 70 degree sunny days. You know, a couple of those days were when Peyton Manning was in town in 2012 when he took his first Broncos visit, and more than a few of us opined at how perfect it was for the Broncos that they got such glorious weather when Manning came in. They could tell him, hey, you know, it's not the great white north up here. It doesn't snow all the time.
Yeah. So players are back in. Monday we got Emmanuel Sanders. We got DeMarcus Ware. On Wednesday we got to hear from Ryan Clady, Von Miller, and David Bruton. And they were able to speak a little bit about what the early message has been. We've seen photos of them working out in the gym. There are banners up. Say relentless discipline. Iron sharpens iron. They're laying the foundation.
Mm-hmm. They're setting the catchphrase is. It's always interesting to see when a new coaching staff comes in what they will emphasize. You know, there were phrases around the building in the Josh McDaniels era. There were different phrases in the John Fox era. There was one lead follower get out of the way was emblazoned in the locker room, and actually the Chicago Bears tweeted out a picture of that phrase on a door at Hallis Hall. So Fox has taken that with him. And then one of the phrases that they're going to emphasize, you mentioned relentless discipline, but one that's in the team room is be accountable. So it's interesting. So what do those mean? I mean, relentless discipline, that's kind of a weight room thing. You've got the big banner in the weight room. That's the kind of mentality they want to see from the players every day. Like in the players and coaches and staff meeting on Monday morning when everyone reconvened. You know, Gary Kubiak, according to people in the meeting, got up and, you know, looked at Luke Richardson, the head strength coach, and said, hey, basically, it's your time. It's your turn. You know, this is your time in the off season to work with these guys and, you know, get them ready. You're the chief. You're the boss. Are you ready for that? So that's where relentless discipline comes in. Be accountable. That's something that's on the back, in a back wall in the team room, and that's something that can go to any type of situation, whether you're talking about, you know, in the weight room when you're working out, or when you're on the field in the game, be accountable to each other. You know, it's one of those phrases that kind of inspires teamwork in people.
And I think one of the things that really hits about that, with especially with Gary Kubiak, was when we were talking to players who had played for him in years past, J.J. Watt. A lot of guys said one of the things they really liked about playing with them, or playing for him, was how well he connects with them, especially as a guy who was a former player And so for him, I mean, he knows that what that accountability means. Mm-hmm.
He has a great understanding of what works for players. That's the sense that you get from seeing him around the building and seeing and then talking to guys about what he's like. Is that he, you know, it shows you in some ways that in the last quarter century, the mindset of players really hasn't changed. You know, maybe the zeros on the end of the paycheck have changed quite a bit in that time, but you know, their mindset and what and their goals and how they go about succeeding, it's pretty much the same as it was back in the 1980s and early 1990s.
And so with the beginning of the strength program, they've also begun meetings. And so the changes that we've been talking about, we've been expecting, moving to a 3-4 defense, the zone blocking scheme for the run game, those meetings are starting to lay the foundation for those changes. What have we been hearing from the players is that they don't expect this change to be all that difficult.
Yeah, it's interesting. On defense, we make a big deal about 4-3 versus 3-4, but there's more and more commonalities between the schemes than people realize. And certainly, you go back to last year, the Broncos had some 3-4 type elements. You had some moments where both Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware were working on the as basically outside linebackers from a stand up pre snap alignment. So, you know, they're well prepared for the change. Talking to Danny Trevathan on Thursday, he mentioned that in many ways, the 3-4 kind of fits this scheme a little bit, or the players a bit better, in part because, you know, as Trevathan and Brandon Marshall get healthy, this alignment's going to allow the two of them to be on the field. Trevathan was very excited. He thinks the linebackers are going to be able to make some more plays in this defense, and he was really, really pumped about this scheme. And it seems like a lot of guys are pumped. Malik Jackson, you know, he's that that 3-technique, 5-technique type end in a 3-4 after being the swing end tackle in a 4-3. And that position in this defense has been tremendously successful from a pass rushing perspective. You know, we know about recent pickup Antonio Smith and what he did in Houston, but of course J.J. Watt and how prolific he is working as a 3-4 end. And it goes all the way. It goes all the way back to the late 70s when Wade Phillips was coaching the Houston Oilers defensive line, and he had a guy named Elvin Bethea, who was a future Hall of Famer, who could wreak havoc in pass rush situations, working from that 3-5 technique type end. So there's a long history of stellar pass rushing. Pass rushing 3-4 ends, and so that's why Malik Jackson's excited. You get that sense that everyone feels that this scheme is, it may have some commonalities with the 4-3, but that it's going to free everyone to attack a little bit more, you know, maybe freelance a little bit more, and maybe force the issue in the game rather than reading and reacting and letting things come to them. I think that's the biggest change in the defense, and I think it's going to suit an aggressive group of guys in the front seven very well.
And on the offensive end, Ryan Clady, I think you asked the question about how he thinks that the running scheme is going to fit in with the young guys being expected to perform more, like Schofield. And he says that he thinks that it's going to be a great fit for guys who, like them, who are a bit more mobile.
Mm-hmm. Well, Schofield, the interesting thing about him in particular at right tackle is that when Gary Kubiak and Rick Dennison were on Baltimore staff last year, they scouted him closely and they really liked him, and he was on their radar. So clearly he fits what a zone blocking scheme would like to do. He's got the skill set for it, he's got the long arms for it, he's got the intelligence for it. Now it's a matter of just putting everything together when you actually get on the field. Of course, that being said, you know, the draft is coming up here in less than 2 weeks, and for all that the Broncos have done to bring in new guys on the offensive line to reshape the line for the zone blocking scheme, building around the twin pillars of Luis Vasquez at right guard and Ryan Clady at left tackle, you know, the odds are pretty good they're going to bring in some new guys, so the depth chart's going to change a little bit and the competition's going to become even more heated. It'll be interesting to see what they do and what that ends up meaning for Michael Schofield, because he's been talked about as an option at right tackle, and we'll see if that's still the case after the draft.
One of the things that they discussed, I think it was in one of the stories, I think it was Kliss, they talked about that they were watching Super Bowl film from the last couple of decades, learning about what makes these teams successful, what they see from the teams. I guess they picked plays that they would watch that shows, this is the complete team.
Right, like a play or two from each of the last 20 Super Bowl winners. A play from the Super Bowl itself.
And naturally, you got their own Broncos Super Bowl against the Seahawks. Mm-hmm. And the play from that one was Percy Harvin's kickoff return in the second half.
Mm-hmm.
Now, special teams has been something that, David Bruton talked about. He talked about what changes that they're going to see from the special teams this year. He said, one, we're going to be more aggressive. We're going to be running fast. We're going to be running downhill. And two, they're going to be more enthusiastic. Enthusiasm in special teams is that's the whole name of the game, pretty much. You devote yourself to being fearless, as he said, and you devote yourself to becoming a part of a group that really takes pride in doing that.
There's a reason why back in the days, you speak of fearless, back in the day they used to call it the Suicide Squad.
Kickoff
and punt return, because you're just sprinting downfield, and it's a full speed collision. You've got, fearless is the apt word to describe it. What was interesting in listening to David Bruton talk about special teams, obviously being the captain of the special teams last year and really the unquestioned leader of that unit, a lot of that improvement in conveying that message beyond the coaches is going to be on him. So, he's going to have to set the tone himself for what guys do on the field, and being fearless and being more aggressive. And when there's a big play, instead of just a couple of guys celebrating, having them all celebrate together,
Right. He said last year,
three or four guys would celebrate. Yeah.
Yeah.
He wants to see the entire unit celebrating together. The thing that was not mentioned by Bruton, but I imagine that Joe DeCamillis is going to make this clear, is you want to be aggressive, but you also want some discipline, because as you recall, penalties were a big problem.
Well, that's where be accountable comes back in.
Exactly. Go back to the first phrase. So there's a lot of work to be done. The special teams really has not, in terms of coverage, the special teams has not pulled its weight at times the last couple of years. But some of that was a result of a lot of changing personnel. You go back to 2013, for instance, so many injuries, especially on defense. So you had backups on defense going into the starting lineup, and the domino effect really affected special teams, and I think in some ways helped lead to the coverage breakdowns on the aforementioned Percy Harvin touchdown to start the second half of Super Bowl 48. But those excuses are only going to take you so far. I mean, so it's been refreshing to see the energy and the message being sent to the special teams. Now we'll see how they handle it going forward. That's going to be an area to watch, because not only because the Broncos need better performance, but also how guys do in the third phase, I think, is going to determine a lot of the last of the bottom third of the roster, who ends up staying and who ends up going, and how much turnover there is when the team turns its final roster Labor Day weekend.
And when you get to special teams buy-in, obviously you need leadership, but the Broncos have no shortage of examples. Chris Harris Jr. being a prime example, working his way up from special teams to working his way into the starting lineup and become perhaps the best cornerback in the league, advanced statistics would say. But then you also have David Bruton, who said his career in Denver was saved by special teams, because he thought he was on his way out. They drafted two safeties a couple years after he was drafted, and he thought he was pretty much done in Denver. And he talks to then special teams coordinator Jeff Rogers, And Rodgers says, man, you gotta ball out. You gotta pretty much ball out here in this preseason game against Seattle if you want to stay on the team, because we only have like one spot for a safety left. Mm-hmm. He goes out, he blocks a couple punts, and I mean, here he is entering his seventh year in the NFL.
Second longest tenured Bronco behind Ryan Clady.
There you go. And I mean, he worked, he got an opportunity last year after a scary injury to TJ Ward, and he started a game and he had a lot more playing time and he really performed pretty well, and he says, well, I want to continue this.
And he has some starting experience even in previous years. He actually started the playoff game in New England and the wild card game the week before against Pittsburgh back in January of 2012 when injuries hit the safety corps. So, you know, he has something to build off of in terms of having done it before. I thought last year when he saw quite a bit of work, particularly when the Broncos went into some dime packages and mm-hmm. moved and had TJ Ward moving around and basically or nickel packages, you had Ward moving around and Bruton went in as a safety when Ward was up in the box. I thought Bruton found a great niche as a guy who could blow up screen passes, who could, you know, watch from the back end, see them develop, and almost had that kind of guided missile mentality and speed the way he attacked. We know that Bruton has always had great straight line speed. We've seen that on special teams all those years, and it was like he applied that to what he was doing on defense, and he became a pretty lethal weapon against an offense when he was used that way. So it'll be interesting to see if he can apply that. I asked him about is there an open competition, and the way that he replied and he described it in replying was that yeah, they didn't use the words open competition, but the coaches did say the best man's going to get the job. So they're open to the notion of someone maybe who they don't have on the top line of their unofficial informal depth chart in their minds. They're open to the notion of a guy playing his way up and starting, and that could play right into Bruton's hands if he does well. Of course, that being said, a lot of chatter about what might happen at safety. You know, there Gary Kubiak talked at the league meetings about Bradley Roby seeing some time at safety in the base package. They brought in Darian Stewart from Baltimore. We know they like him. He had a solid season. Probably the best season of his career last year in Baltimore. So, it's going to be a tough competition. And if Bruton does get extensive playing time at safety with that group, it will be clear that he's earned it.
Now, as we enter our final segment, I'd like to say hello to our Periscope viewers. If you're interested, you can ask us a question. We'll answer it towards the end. You can just send those in on the app. We're getting into this final segment talking about the safety competition. Mace touched on possibly moving corner Bradley Roby into a safety spot
in the base package. Let's be clear on this. The only chatter about this is Roby being safety in the base and then going back to corner in the nickel. It's something that other teams have done. The Chargers did this with Marcus Gilchrist the last few years. Kind of really a little bit similar thinking to when the Broncos had a 4-3 defense and brought in Von Miller. And there was some thought, hey, Miller's more of a 3-4 guy than a 4-3, but the Broncos said, no, we're going to use him as a strong side linebacker in the base 4-3, and then when we go nickel, he's basically going to be a rush defensive end.
Bruton said at his press conference that he envisions himself as the starter. Mm-hmm. We haven't had a chance to talk to Darian Stewart yet, but he's was kind of expected, I think, when he was signed to be the guy who replaced Raheem Moore.
Well, his quote when he had a conference call with media after he agreed to terms with the Broncos, I think he described himself on defense as the final piece of the puzzle. So I think he's expecting that. Competition is very healthy. That's what you want. That's what you want to see. At the same time, you've got to make sure that you have the right guys to where if they lose the competition, they're not going to cause significant internal problems. They're not going to bellyache. They're going to focus on their job. I think certainly with David Bruton, that's the kind of that's a classic example of a guy who maybe isn't. If he wins the job, that would be terrific. But if not, he's not going to be. He's not going to cause problems in the locker room. He's going to accept his role and he's going to work his tail off to try and get back on that top line. So if you have a lot of guys like that, and I think the Broncos have a fair amount of players like that on their second team at this point that want more playing time, it brings healthy competition, and I think it creates a good dynamic in the locker room because it'll keep the starters on their toes.
Now, we've obviously talked about that competition being key in the offensive line, but one of the other spots, I mean, C.J. Anderson is the starter, as Coach Kubiak said.
And Emmanuel Sanders, what he said, C.J. is walking around the building kind of with his chest puffed out a little bit, you know.
But that's a deep group of running backs there. Yeah. Ronnie Hillman had his moments before he had a sprained ankle, I think it was. Mm-hmm. Monte Ball never quite got, he got hurt in that Arizona game.
Although he actually said he tweaked the groin first in week one.
Oh yeah,
like he later said that, you know, he messed up in not telling the trainers when he first felt something in week one, and you then start wondering, okay, did the appendectomy that cost him prep time in camp in the preseason, did that play a role as well? Did he maybe rush back from that? You know, there's a lot of layers to that, but the general point is that Monte Ball was never really healthy in 2014, and he does have starting experience, and we saw toward the end of the 2013 season that he could be effective. That in fact, on a per carry basis, through the postseason in the last few games of 2013, was more effective than No'Shawn Moreno was toward the end of that year. So, you know, he can do it. Juwan Thompson, he's a short yardage goal line option who does have some breakaway capability, good blocker, and can also make plays in the open field in the passing game.
Did he have the longest rush?
He did. He did have the longest run last year. And I saw Eric Studisville, running backs coach, around the building not too long ago, and he said, hey, don't forget about Capri Bibbs. Still very high on him. Spent most of his rookie season on the practice squad, and they think he's got a role. So
open competition, not a bad problem to have some places.
No, and especially at a position group like running back, where it's a high attrition position, and guys do get hurt. And you know, we alluded to Ronnie Hillman's injury, Monte Ball's injury, and then of course C.J. Anderson had a concussion last year during the preseason. So all of those top three guys dealt with some injury that cost them playing time at some point last year. That shows you the necessity of having a deep stable of backs like the Broncos have, and it's good for competition. I think if C.J. Anderson ends up winning the job, that's going to be terrific. And you know, we saw what he could do last year. I think he can do even better in this offense, and in his own, working behind his own blocking scheme, can maybe have the kind of season that Justin Forsett had last year, playing if he plays a full year. But if something does happen to CJ, if he struggles or he gets hurt, the Broncos are in good shape. You know, there's some people that think that maybe running back is a need in the draft, and with 10 picks, it wouldn't surprise me if the Broncos took a running back at some point just to bolster that depth and have another guy in the mix. But at the same time, this is a pretty good group that they've got.
So that'll wrap up our final segment here of the podcast. But before we go, Scott, have we had any questions?
We actually have. I think one of the biggest ones, you know, lots of people always are asking Mace, what's the biggest need for the Broncos heading into the draft?
Well, we touched on offensive line, and I wouldn't say there's any position that's a pressing need. You look all over the roster, the Broncos have veteran, experienced options at every position. So that puts them in a good place going into the draft to where they don't have to fill a need. That being said, you're also looking at expiring contracts after this year. You know, which players might you be able to keep? Which players might you have to let go of for contract reasons? And so you look at, say, defensive end, even the Broncos addressed that in free agency. That's one need. Offensive line, you know, there's question marks there. You have veteran options, but maybe you want to address that. Inside linebacker, Brandon Marshall and Dane Trevathan both have expiring contracts. Or pardon me, Trevathan has expiring contract. Marshall is an RFA, so he's on a one-year exclusive rights this year. He's restricted next year. That may be a need. We talked about safety. David Bruton, you know, if he pushes for the job, great, but he too has an expiring contract, and, you know, Darian Stewart's on a short-term deal. So safety might be something they consider, and also quarterback. It's something, it's a little bit of an elephant in the room right now as far as, you know, where is Brock Osweiler? Is he the guy of the future? You know, new coaching staff coming in, you know, how will they feel about him? But Osweiler's contract is up after this year, and if Peyton Manning comes back for 2016, then is Osweiler really going to want to come back and be a backup again, or is he going to want to take his chance to start elsewhere? It would not surprise me at all if they take a quarterback. So I wouldn't call anything a pressing need, but I would say there are positions like those that the Broncos will address in the draft.
All right, we'll shift over to you, Ben.
Okay.
What do you think the AFC West looks like this year? Questions about that.
Okay, yeah. We talked about this on a podcast a few weeks ago, I think. Mm-hmm. We touched on it was right after the second wave of free agency kind of wrapped up. It seems like the Broncos still have, I mean, they still have a great core of great players from past free agency splashes, but teams around the division are starting to kind of catch up. We talked about how the Chiefs made a pretty big splash, and the Chargers got Orlando Franklin, bolstered their offensive line, which was a pretty big need for them. So teams are getting better around the division. We'll see how that kind of shapes up. Obviously, the Raiders are still a little ways away. They're still trying to build something there. But basically, the feeling is that though the Broncos still are your four-time defending AFC West champ, and they're heading into a year where they're probably expected to be the favorites again, teams are starting to kind of catch up and build more talent. Obviously, those two teams, the Chiefs and the Chargers, were both in, you know, chasing for that wild card spot as the season wound down, got eliminated late in the year. So they're still going to be, you know, challengers to the Broncos' throne.
And also to address the Chargers, reports are they're working out Marcus Mariota from Oregon today as we record this. So that's pretty interesting because of all the rumblings about Philip Rivers, what might happen there, you know, the rumblings that and the quotes from him that he's a little reticent about the potential of playing in Los Angeles if the Chargers do move there and follow through with their stated plan of a stadium with the Raiders that they put out there a couple months ago, of course, and the Rams are involved with their own potential stadium project as well, their owner Stan Kroenke. So really, that's something that could change the entire future of the Chargers. And certainly will change their outlook in the short term, because if they let go of Philip Rivers, if they do trade him, then even though if they got Marcus Mariota, even though they would have a young guy with a lot of potential, he'd still be a young quarterback who I think will have some growing pains. And so that would change the Chargers' outlook for 2015 if they decide to part ways with Philip Rivers.
And one of the things we forgot to touch on with the Chargers and the Chiefs, who were both in playoff contention, contention to get into the playoffs, I should say, was that they had huge injuries. The Chargers with running back woes and offensive line problems. I think they used something like five different centers throughout the year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then the Chiefs had some major injuries to their linebacking core and defensive line.
Eric Berry had, right, you know, had cancer as well and missed time at safety.
So for them to kind of still be fighting for a wild card spot towards the end of the year was kind of impressive for the, you know, the attrition that they went through. So with them having injuries, you know, obviously the injuries can still happen next year, but being healthy, you know, they could definitely be big time challengers.
Time for one more?
Sure. One more. Yeah.
How do you guys see James Casey being used this year? There's a lot of questions about the new guys.
Right.
He's kind of that Swiss Army guy that might be pushing out there.
Well, his position is probably officially listed as a tight end. He's been used extensively with Houston back when he was with Kubiak, was as a lead blocker / tight end. You know, he was kind of like a fullback. Helped Arian Foster for a couple years reach 1,200 and 1,400 rushing yards for back-to-back seasons there. Versatile player, not going to be the starter or anything, but he can definitely block and be used as kind of like a Swiss Army knife type player, make an impact on special teams. He was a part of great special teams work with the Eagles previously before he was released. So kind of a guy who can help out and do the little things, though he won't be any big threat for touchdowns.
And obviously, you know, his strength is as a run blocker. Saw that in Philadelphia. But don't dismiss him as a pass-catching threat. He started 9 games for the Texans back in 2012. He caught 34 passes. Playing, you know, when the Texans used a lot of two tight end formations, playing with James Casey and Owen Daniels, they work very well together. Obviously, it's going to be mostly Owen Daniels and Virgil Green if things work out as the Broncos expect, but certainly Casey can step in. You know, wouldn't surprise me at all if he fills a role that, you know, longtime Broncos fans may remember a guy named Patrick Hape back in the early 2000s who, you know, again, another Swiss Army knife type guy. You'd see him at fullback, you'd see him at H-back, you'd see him at tight end in 2 and 3 tight end sets, and he was particularly effective in the goal line as a pass catcher. I could see Casey filling that same kind of role for the Broncos this year.
Okay, well, thanks for the questions. I think we'll keep doing the Periscope for podcasts in the future, so be sure to tune in. It's going to be usually on Thursdays. Come with questions. We'll be happy to answer them. Thanks for tuning in, and that'll wrap up our podcast for this week.